Welcome to All In, a straight shooting, science-based podcast about periods, fertility, and nurturing health outside of unrealistic beauty expectations. We will mostly, but not exclusively, focus on hypothalamic amenorrhea, HA, a component of the female athlete triad and relative energy deficiency in sport.
I'm Dr. Nicola Rinaldi, scientist and lead author of the book No Period, Now What? I specialize in helping people understand how their eating, exercise, and lifestyle habits are keeping them from hormonal health and their best life. My work focuses on regaining periods, improving fertility, and breaking free of the rules of underlying diet culture. You can book an appointment to speak with me at noperiod.info/appointments and go to noperiod.info/support to join my new online community.
My name is Florence Gillet. I am a certified eating psychology coach and the founder of beyondbodyimage.com, as well as the French Instagram account aminoré_fr. I specialize in weight-inclusive mental and body image recovery. My goal is to help people let go of toxic weight and beauty beliefs to finally feel confident in their bodies.
Florence and I also offer a joint coaching package for people wishing to address different aspects of period recovery in a more personal way, accessible from both of our appointment sites.
Every 2 weeks, the All In podcast brings you real recovery stories, expert insights, and new scientific research on HA, hormonal health, and fertility, with an unmissable touch of body respect and women's empowerment.
Just a reminder that this podcast represents the opinions of the hosts and their guests. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It's for informational purposes only. And because each person is so unique, please consult your primary health practitioner for any medical questions.
Music by the Andy Shulman Band, available on Spotify. And good morning, Nicola.
And good evening to you, Florence. I'm excited to introduce our guest for today. We have joining us registered dietitian Lindsay Lusson. She specializes in disordered eating and infertility. She has both personal and professional experience with hypothalamic amenorrhea, HA, or period loss related to overexercise and undereating. Our main topic of discussion. Her experience led her to become passionate about educating and empowering others to advocate for the health and take charge of their fertility through proper nutrition. She's helped dozens of women recover natural cycles, get pregnant, and heal their relationship with food and exercise along the way. So welcome, Lindsay. It's so nice to have you with us.
I'm so excited to come on. Thank you so much for having me.
Also want to put in a plug for the podcast that you interviewed me on that came out just a couple weeks ago. So
yes, I actually just released it yesterday and like I'm already getting so much great feedback. So That's awesome. So appreciate your time and coming on.
And we appreciate you returning the favor.
Yes. Very nice to meet you again. I know we, not that long ago, we had the IG Live together where we talked a little bit more about period recovery and body image. So very nice to see you again, Lindsay. Just to get started today, can you tell us a little bit more about how you came to be a dietitian, a bit more about your story?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of ironic because I think that what initially led me to become a dietitian was an unhealthy obsession with eating in terms of wanting to eat super clean and super healthy and be as healthy as possible, almost to a fault. And so when I initially started studying to become a dietitian, I was also kind of on the line between disordered eating and eating disorder. And so it's ironic that that's kind of what led me into nutrition, but it's also really cool that 15 years later, full circle, I have this skill set and I'm actually able to help people, you know, recover from what I was dealing with when I was studying to be a dietitian.
Yeah. It's so interesting because that seems to be the case for a lot of people is that they get into being a dietitian because they're already super concerned with food and it just kind of, it's a way to make it almost socially acceptable to be that way.
Well, it's hard because it's an easy way to hide behind disordered eating and eating disorders because it's your profession and people can't question what you're saying because you're the expert.
So we know that you also experienced HA. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey and, you know, what sort of led to your missing periods and then your recovery story?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mine started pretty young. I was 17, and for whatever reason, I decided it was time for me to start, you know, like getting more active. I don't know, get fit, whatever it was. So I started Weight Watchers, which is laughable now because I never needed to lose weight. But a lot of my friends were engaging in really kind of diety, disordered eating behaviors. And so at the time, like, I kind of thought that that was normal to be doing different diets. And so I went from never dieting, never having any sort of, like, I grew up in a home where everyone modeled a relatively healthy relationship with food. So I went from a very normal eater to a dieter. At the same time, I also introduced a considerable amount of exercise. So I started working out probably 5 days a week, doing mostly high intensity stuff. And so over the course of about 2 to 3 months, I lost about pounds. So like your textbook HA story. And so there went my period. And initially it wasn't like completely gone. It was like, I kind of had a regular period. So by the time I saw my doctor, she said, oh, you know, this happens. Like, girls your age have irregular periods. So here's the pill. It's going to regulate your cycle. She had also done labs and my estrogen was really low. So, you know, that's okay. You know, the pill's going to fix it. And so I was just kind of on birth control for majority of my, 20s. But I never really liked the way that it made me feel because it was just synthetic hormones. I think my body is just really sensitive to that. And so I always knew when I came off the pill that I wasn't getting my period. So I was hyper aware of the issue. There just wasn't a lot of information, you know, in 2000, from like 2005 to, you know, really when the book was published, like, you could not find a lot of information on, I mean, I could never put a name on it. I think, you know, going into grad school, and I even did, a project on female athlete triad, and I even considered, you know, getting my PhD and kind of studying that. And so that was the closest thing that I could come to it. But I was also like, yeah, but I'm not an athlete. Like, I was very much like a recreational exerciser. And so it wasn't until I found your book in 2016, very end of 2016, that I finally was able to put a name on what I had. And then it took me a good 6 to 9 months to come to terms with the recovery process. And then I think one day I like finally joined, or I think I had been a member of your Facebook group, and I finally created my first post. And as soon as I did, I was like, oh, this is it. Like, now that I've spoken the words, I have to work on my recovery. And so here we are coming up on 4 or 5 years later, and it's one of the best decisions I ever made in my entire life is to choose recovery.
Yeah. And how has this personal story of yours informed your work as a dietitian? Do you think you went into dietetics because you wanted to really focus so much on what you were eating or how you were getting healthier, quote unquote? How did that play a role?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people who work in the nutrition field as dietitians are helping people in some capacity with weight loss. And so that's what majority of my career was. And so when I started trying to recover my period, there it was a lot of undoing what I had studied and learned for 10 years. And so that was challenging, but I also love that I have that knowledge in my back pocket to, you know, help those that are also in that space. A lot of times women struggling with HA have a really good knowledge of nutrition. And that can be really hard when someone's trying to recovery because they're like, yeah, but vegetables are healthy. Yeah, but exercise is healthy. And so, you know, going through recovery, I had to unlearn some things, or I had to really challenge some things and figure out where I landed on things. And I don't want to say completely go against things that I learned, but again, challenge them and to understand that there's so much nuance when it comes to nutrition and everything, you know, like regular recommendations by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics can apply to the general population. They do not have to apply to somebody who's working to recover their period.
Oh, I love that you say that. You know, I find that I struggle a lot with that with my coaching clients that go through getting pregnant. And if they have had a little bit of help in, you know, fertility treatments and support of any kind, I have a lot of clients based in France, so they get the pump, which helps them a lot. And it's kind of one of the only places in the world where you can get that. It's, mm-hmm. you know, relatively simple and non-invasive treatment. Nicola, you're going to say something.
So for listeners who may not be aware, the pump is gonadotropin releasing hormone pump. So it's like almost like an insulin pump that you wear, and it gives your body pulses of the GnRH on a regular basis. So it basically takes over, it replaces your hypothalamus. So it can lead to ovulation and therefore to pregnancy. It is probably the most physiologic way to sort of encourage ovulation in somebody with HA, except for actually recovering and doing it on your own.
Yes.
So it's certainly, it's an option for people in France and Canada and possibly some other countries maybe. But certainly, again, I don't recommend it as, instead of recovery. It's like maybe as an adjunct to recovery if you're impatient about getting pregnant. But
Totally. Yeah. And so that's what I meant to say, actually. You know, sometimes they go all in as a side of the fertility treatment they receive through the pump. So they have obviously improved their relationship somehow with food and their body and exercise, but not to a point where they would naturally cycle and wait for that cycle to come and get pregnant. And so then when they go through pregnancy, I find that it's the hardest for them because they get all these recommendations. And I'm sure you see that as well, even in clients that have recovered naturally, where they're like, but I'm only supposed to put on that much weight in my pregnancy, or I'm only supposed to eat this way, I cannot possibly eat that way. And you're like, no, you're like, you cannot be seen as the general case for pregnancy because you come from a background of starvation, basically. So we have to really amend things. And I'm so glad that you're saying that, because this is something I repeat all the time to my clients, where they're like, you are not you're not concerned by this general set of guidelines because you're actually taking it the opposite way too much, really. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Oh, totally. And another way I'll describe it to people is, you know, the recovery, you know, quote unquote diet, if you will, is almost like a therapeutic diet, right? Like if someone has diabetes or somebody is in, you know, stage 4 liver failure, they're going to have to follow a specific diet to get their bodies back to baseline. And so the way that you're eating for recovery is unique and specific to your condition, and the general recommendations don't apply.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking of it too. Yeah.
It's difficult, I think, you know, it's difficult because we've really internalized a lot of those messages, and I was doing so well being the healthiest I've ever been. And obviously I had totally made the confusion between being thinner and being healthier. The reality is the thinner I was getting, the less healthy I was getting, but it's really difficult to unlearn all of that stuff. And I mean, I can see how, obviously for a dietitian, I can't imagine how hard that must be.
Yeah. So Lindsay, you've been an amazing supporter of No Period Now What since, I didn't realize you were actually one of the very early people to get the book, which is really cool. And so, you know, so very much appreciated. So can you tell us a bit more about how the recovery plan agrees with or disagrees with what you learned during your training as a dietitian, and how your thoughts on those topics have changed now?
I think that there's definitely some things that do agree. There are when you talk about the general recommendations from the, you know, USDA, it's nutritional adequacy. And so when we talk about a person who is following a restrictive low calorie diet and engaging in hours of exercise, I don't think that there's going to be if you can really get down to it and somebody can be very honest about their habits, I don't think there's going to be a well-informed, you know, someone who's not struggling with an eating disorder dietitian who's going to say, yes, that's healthy, keep doing that. So I think at its core, there's some things that agree, right? Like we talk about making sure that there's adequate amounts of carbohydrates and fat and protein. And so I think from a nutritional adequacy standpoint, they agree. Now, a lot of the recommendations are also rooted in diet culture. I mean, this could be a whole nother topic, but, you know, just to touch on it briefly, there's recommendations about weight loss and maintaining a healthy BMI. There's a lot of emphasis on BMI and body size. And if you're not fitting into this box, the recommendation is restrictive diets and weight control and exercise. And so that's not healthy. And that doesn't agree with the recovery plan, because we know that HA can occur to people in small bodies, I don't know, quote unquote, normal bodies, and also in larger bodies. And so I'd say that's where the biggest disagreement is that a lot of, you know, professional nutrition recommendations are going to say, if you are in a quote unquote normal BMI or even on the higher side, they're going to say you would probably get a lot of pushback from a dietitian who isn't informed on HA that this is not a healthy plan. The recovery plan is not healthy because you're encouraging somebody to eat too many calories. You are encouraging someone to gain weight. I've even had people comment on my post that I'm promoting obesity.
Oh, of course.
Right. So I think that there are definitely things that disagree. And yeah, it's hard. It's hard when people are in that space of the nutrition or fitness or wellness field to understand that the recovery plan is actually healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is interesting that there also has to be so much education about health at every size that goes along with the recovery plan. And certainly that's something that I have learned so much more about since publishing the book. And, you know, that's why I published the second edition, because I felt like it wasn't very, I mean, a lot of what I had come to naturally in terms of like, whatever size your body needs to be is the size it needs to be. You know, that is very Hays aligned, but I think that there were some times where I was using some of the more negative terms in the book that I wasn't really aware of their negative ramifications at the time. But yeah, I mean, it's still like, I mean, that's why I work with Florence, is there's so much of the recovery that is also wrapped up in our change, shifting our mental thinking about food, exercise, and our bodies.
By the way, just sorry, on the side, did you see that little segment they had on Grey's Anatomy where they debunked the BMI?
I did. Do you see that, Lindsay?
I saw the post. I didn't actually get to read into what they had done. Yeah.
It's like Grey's Anatomy, health at every size, woohoo!
And I've seen another segment, I'm not sure if it's also from Grey's Anatomy, where, you know, they had a larger size patient coming for knee pain and being told to lose weight and walking away. And then, did you see that?
I was about to bring that up, because when I just had my most recent baby, I exclusively pumped. I spent a lot of time pumping. So I spent a lot of time watching TV, and I started rewatching Grey's Anatomy. And I was about to reference that exact episode you're talking about. And that was a long time ago. Like, that was probably like 2004 or five that they were talking about that. So they were definitely kind of ahead of the game there.
So interesting. I love to see
the new one. The new one was just basically a redux of that same thing. Yeah.
Oh, and it was like bang on. It was like BMI is completely stupid. It doesn't show anything. We should get rid of that. So really cool. Anyway, sorry, that was me sidetracking things. So Lindsay, when you started working on recovery, did you already have pregnancy in mind and fertility in mind? Is this kind of where you stood and what motivated you? Because I read on your website that you were recommended to go through IVF if you wanted to be pregnant. Can you tell us more about your fertility journey?
Yeah. So it's interesting, because in probably 2014, I was probably 2 years into dating my now husband, and I felt this like draw to really figure out why I wasn't getting my period. So I went to go see a reproductive endocrinologist and had a horrible experience. Walked away from that experience. I was basically told, you're perfectly healthy. You know, and this is after spending thousands of dollars out of pocket. I was told, you're perfectly healthy. You just don't get a period. Come see me again when you're ready to have kids.
And that is so ridiculous. How can a woman be completely healthy if she doesn't have a menstrual cycle? I still don't get that.
Yeah. So, I mean, needless to say, I never saw that doctor again, but it was always in the back of my mind that, like, I'm never going to get my period back. And because of that, I'm going to need fertility treatment to get pregnant. And so finding no period now what was like this little glimmer of hope. But I think, like most women who have AHA, you go through kind of a denial period. And oh, I'm yeah. like, I don't know if this is really me. Is it worth it to change my whole lifestyle and gain weight and then still need fertility treatment? And so it wasn't until I saw my OB before we were ready to quote unquote start trying that, because I kind of assumed, just having friends that had been through fertility treatment, I kind of assumed like, oh, I'm not ovulating, I don't get a period, I can just have Clomid and I'll be totally fine. And my OB was really honest. And she was like, listen, if you're not getting your cycle at all, I don't even think that's going to work for you. I would send you straight to a fertility clinic. And it's possible you're going to need injectables and maybe even IVF. And it was so nice that she was so honest, because that is what finally propelled me to go all in. Because I just knew, like, I had a really close friend who had a 3-year infertility journey, and she had just been through IVF. And it's like, if you can avoid that, like, even if there's like a, you know, there's a way higher chance than this, but in my mind at the time, even if there's a 5-10% chance you can avoid having to do IVF, why not? And my doctor kind of said that too. I told her about the recovery plan, and she wasn't like, yeah, that's what you need to do. But she was a great doctor and just a really like advocated for her patients in the sense that she was like, that kind of makes sense. And if you mm-hmm. feel like that could work for you, then I support you in doing that.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think it makes such a difference for a doctor to approach it that way than to say, no, there's no way it's going to work. And, you know, you've got a 2% chance of recovering your period, even if you do that. And like, it's interesting how just a slight difference in phrasing can make all the difference to how you feel and how supported you feel by your doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened from there?
Yeah. Did that get you out of denial completely?
It got me out of it. I think that after that visit was when I finally posted in the Facebook group. And mm-hmm. I think my first post, this is embarrassing, but honest and raw. I think I made a post about how I was ready to go all in, but I was asking if people had gone all in and not gained weight. And so I don't even know who it was, but somebody in the comments very lovingly just said, you're going to gain weight. Like, this is part of it. The sooner that you can accept it, the easier yeah. this is going to be for you. And I didn't want to hear it, but that was the honest truth. And so what happened next was my husband and I were leaving for a 2-week trip abroad. And it just made sense to start my all-in journey there, because it would have been a pain to like seek out gyms. And like, who wants to go, you know, to Italy, where there is the most delicious food in the world, and try to like eat salads for every single meal? And so we got on our plane and I started my quote all in journey. I just ate, like, just really enjoyed food. There were times when it wasn't meal time, but like, you know, as when you're going through recovery and your metabolism speeds up and you start having like actual normal hunger hormones, like I was feeling hungry a lot, and I just went for it. Like, you know, it could be 2:00 in the afternoon. We had lunch an hour ago. You know, my husband's not eating, but I'm hungry. So I'm going to go get gelato, or, you know, we're going to pop into a cafe and get a glass of wine. We're going to order some bruschetta with it. So I really did go all in on that journey. And I'm kind of one of those people that my body responded really quickly. And so I came home 2.5 weeks later with a period. And then that was another little carrot in my recovery journey to say like, hey, this works, like keep going. And so I did. And I, you know, continued to have, I think I had 3 recovery cycles and I got pregnant on my 4th.
Nice. How long were those first cycles? Do you remember?
My first cycle was 35 days. And then I think it was 30 days. And then I ovulated on cycle day 16 of the cycle I got pregnant on.
Nice.
Yeah. So mine were actually pretty normal, you know, from the get-go. But I mean, I also kept doing what I was doing. I continued to make sure I was eating, you know, close to the quote unquote minimums, and I wasn't doing any exercise aside from walking my dogs. And so I think that that's a really critical piece too in, you know, getting your body where it needs to be for fertility.
What did your OB said when you went back pregnant a few months later?
I mean, she was ecstatic, and I don't think that she was shocked, because, you know, most doctors see everything, right? I don't think that it was something that was eye-opening for her and like changing her practice, although I did give her a copy of your book, Nicola. I don't know if she uses nice. It, but she was excited, surprised, but not shocked, because I'm sure she's seen that before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do know that there are people who sort of haven't had a period for a long time and, you know, go to their doctor and they're like, you're pregnant. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, but obviously that's when somebody has HA, that's fairly unlikely. So we do definitely encourage working towards recovery and, you know, going all in, et cetera.
Maybe the trick is actually going to Italy.
I think it is. I mean, I think we could write that into the recovery plan.
Get yourself a trip to Italy. I love it.
So there's a lot of information about dietary changes, mostly restrictive, that people are exposed to when they start trying to get pregnant. Like for me, the idea that losing weight would help me get pregnant, because I read that everywhere on the internet, you know, lose weight and you'll have an easier time getting pregnant. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, let's anyway, not sure. Yeah. So what are your general recommendations for people trying to get pregnant as far as food and diet go?
Yeah. I mean, number one is making sure you're eating enough. So if you're a person that's been on hormonal birth control for years and years and years, the pill is naturally going to deplete your body of some essential vitamins and minerals like folic acid, the B vitamins, magnesium. And so making sure, you know, the best way to prevent or correct a vitamin deficiency is going to be to make sure you're eating enough. So, you know, there's a lot of things out there telling people that they need to restrict or lose weight, just diet culture. But, you know, first and foremost, people need to make sure they're eating enough. And I think that that's where sometimes you'll read about like fertility diets, quote unquote. And they're really, you know, you could follow the quote healthiest diet, but if you simply aren't eating enough for your body to ovulate, then, you know, you're missing the mark on a healthy diet for fertility. So that's what I always tell people initially, is you need to make sure that you're actually eating enough. And then, yeah, like, you know, making sure that, you know, you're having fruits and vegetables and you're having whole grains and you're having fats and protein. Like, yes, all of those things are healthy, but it doesn't have to be black and white. Like, just because we say, you know, make sure there's vegetables at your meal, we're not also saying like that, like saying you can eat these things, but you can't also have a cupcake. You can't also have ice cream. You can't also have pizza. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. And so I think that sometimes people really like to run with some of those general recommendations on a healthy diet for fertility, and they like to twist them and turn them into absolutes. And that's really frustrating, you know, to hear, but that's what diet culture does.
And do you see that a lot as well? I see a lot of the orthorexia really shining through those books around fertility diets and stuff. It's not that they will tell you to eat less or to specifically lose weight, but then they will tell you avoid this because it's very toxic, and sugar is this and that, and fats have to be this type of fat only, and I cannot
help, dairy
and
gluten,
exactly. And so I cannot help but feel for those women that are reading those things, and they're like, oh, of course I don't want to put all this toxic stuff in my body. And the problem is, when you eliminate all of those things, because sometimes you don't have access to the right type of non-toxic, organic, free-range, whatever, pasture-raised. Like, I, you know, try to do that in Dubai. There is no pasture-raised anything. There is no raw dairy to get. It's just impossible to find. So So then, you know, I find that these women will say, like, then I'm not going to touch any of that because it's going to be toxic for me. And this is where, you know, then obviously their hunger and fullness cues kind of get used to that as well. And so they come to, I'm sure you have people coming to you and saying, I feel like I eat enough. I'm not hungry. I eat all of the right things. So what am I supposed to do? And I find that's also really difficult to unlearn all the stuff about food being really toxic for you. And it's all about balance, right? Yeah. How do you go about dealing with that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you know, whatever you're reading in a book like that, there might be some truth to it, but to say that like every single person cannot tolerate gluten and to say that sugar is toxic is taking things out of context. And to your point too, Florence, like I have a real problem with this like elitist nutrition recommendations. You know, not everybody can afford to eat organic fruits and vegetables. Not everybody has access to pasture raised, you know.
Totally.
So I have a real problem with that. And, you know, the way that I encourage people to go about unlearning it is just to challenge it, right? Like we talk about, why do you believe this to be true? Is there the possibility that maybe it's not 100% true? And let's also take a step back and talk about what's going to be most important for you right now in this moment. Is you continuing to be vegan or follow this ridiculously borderline orthorexic diet, is this going to be helpful for you improving your relationship with food? Is this going to be helpful for you getting your period back? And I think when we can start challenging those thoughts and think about what is going to support the individual in their specific goals, then we can kind of start undoing some of those, you know, thought processes.
Yeah. And is there something specific that or different in the way that you support women in their recovery if they want to get pregnant immediately or if they just want to recover their cycles?
Yeah. I mean, from a food perspective, I wouldn't say it's incredibly different just because, you know, the fastest way to be able to get pregnant is going to be to get your period back. And so if anything, you know, I know that we've got, you know, the recommendations for the minimums, but I always kind of tell my clients to remember that that's a baseline. And if you go over and above, you're probably going to recover faster. For my clients that are working on fertility, I'm like, throw the numbers out the window, just eat, like give yourself unconditional permission to eat. And hey, by the way, let's talk about all of these rules and restrictions that you have in place that are preventing you from really just honoring your hunger and allowing your body what it needs. And so I really encourage my clients that are trying to conceive to just like go as deep into the recovery process as they can right away. And then on the exercise side of things, I'm really encourage people to not push the limits on exercise. As we know, you know, continuing to exercise during recovery is probably what's going to lead to those longer or regular cycles, the luteal phase issues and those types of things.
A lot of us sort of have this vision in mind of ourselves as pregnant people with, you know, just the perfect little basketball belly and nothing else. And I think that that's sort of one of the most toxic diet culture presentations of pregnancy is that basically you're just this vessel for, you know, and your body is not going to change. And if it does change, then that's really, you know, that's kind of your fault and you're doing something wrong. So I think there's sort of this idea of like, you only need to eat X amount extra. How do you sort of push back on some of that mythology?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too, because HA aside, I've just walked with a lot of like friends and family members through pregnancies. And my takeaway on, you know, pregnancy eating and pregnancy weight gain is like, your body is going to gain the amount of weight that it needs to sustain a healthy baby, whether that's 25 pounds or 65 pounds. And so I think that it's really damaging to put these parameters around recommended weight gain, especially someone coming from a history of an eating disorder or disordered eating. I don't think that it's helpful. You know, too, if we're telling, you know, people that they need X amount of calories extra and no more, when somebody's still in very much in recovery from HA, that can feel really restrictive. And so I don't think that that's helpful. And I think, you know, just like we were talking a minute ago about how the general recommendations for the population in, you know, if we were to say like what USDA says about, you know, nutritional adequacy and calorie recommendations and exercise recommendations, they don't apply to someone trying to recover their period. Just like I don't feel like the general recommendations for a healthy pregnancy, you know, eating and exercise 100% are going to apply to a woman who has this history of HA. You know, nutrition and exercise, right? Because if somebody is in recovery from an exercise addiction and we're saying you need to make sure that you're exercising during your pregnancy, maybe you don't. Like maybe this is the time for you to continue to rest and heal your relationship with exercise rather than being thrown into these triggering recommendations.
Hmm. And I find that OBGYNs forget about that, right? It's funny because I didn't know that, Lindsay, but our stories are somehow similar in the sense of I also went to my doctor. She diagnosed me correctly, which was like already a win if you think about it, because I had a word that I could look for. And that's how I actually found Nicola's blog, which was really helpful. But then she literally looked at me and she said, I don't know why you have this, because I was quote unquote a normal size. Which was untrue because I was really underweight from my normal size. And then she said, the only way for you would be IVF, right? And I was in a similar situation as you, where I was like, I couldn't put myself into like, I'm going to go straight to IVF. I was like, there has to be another way for me to somehow enhance my fertility. So I went through recovery and got my period back and got pregnant quite quickly as well. So I show up one day at her office and say, I think I'm pregnant. Can we test? You know, she tests me, I'm pregnant, follows me. And then through my pregnancy, I had those months where I gained a lot and then months where I gained very little. It was not linear for me. It was not like boom, 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 like softly, you know, every week or whatever, a little bit. No, it was like I used to gain a lot and then suddenly plateau and then gain a lot again. And it shocked me in retrospect, not at the time, I was not educated enough to know, but it shocked me that she would say to me, oh, you're gaining too much now. Oh, this is too fast. Because I was like, come on, you're talking to someone who had HA, right? So it's clearly someone who was over restrictive or over exercising, managed to get pregnant naturally. Just give her that nutrition, really. Who gives to, right? And I think it's difficult for them to just make the link as well and to kind of understand that, well, that might be someone that tends to have a little bit of an issue around being too restrictive. Maybe I'm not going to comment on the weight gain, unless obviously there's really something that I see as problematic. But it was not the case. You know, I had a fairly normal pregnancy. Is this something you see as well showing up?
Yeah, unfortunately. You know, I think that the medical community is really ill-informed on what eating disorders and disordered eating can look like. They're not sensitive to the situation. And they use very triggering language. And I see this very often. It almost makes me want to consider finding some way to have some sort of training for medical professionals on how to approach women who you might suspect that they have some sort of disordered eating or eating disorder going on. And I mean, it could almost be like a, instead of this, say this, like it could be so simple.
Totally on board with that. 100%.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
There's a real gap here.
Yeah. I think another problem that I see is particularly in people that have had HA, I'm sure people that have had eating disorders as well. You know, again, pregnancy can be really challenging body image wise because your body's changing, and you know, maybe you're getting more bloated and you're retaining water, and you look and feel different from before. So there are definitely people who significantly undereat during pregnancy, and so they will be weighed and their doctors will say, oh, you're not gaining very much weight. Let's check the baby. baby's fine. So, okay, keep doing what you're doing. And I'm like, I want to tear my hair out with that because, you know, baby's probably going to be fine. Yes. You know, there, I do have some, potential, you know, there are some potential issues that can come up with that as well. But even then it's like, but what about the mom? Like that's the piece that I think is often really missing is like, if you're delivering a baby and you end up coming out of the hospital weighing less than you were pre-pregnancy, like that's a huge problem for your body because you have no stores for breastfeeding. You have, you know, you're probably really hungry. So you're more anxious. You're more likely to have postpartum depression, I would suspect. You know, it's just like, let's focus on the whole person and not just so much on the baby. So yeah, that's something that I struggle with that.
Well, it's a big problem. I actually have worked with a good amount of people that didn't have HA and had a baby. And then because they had these restrictive behaviors during their pregnancy, they didn't gain enough weight and they end up underweight, you know, mm-hmm. postpartum, and then they have HA. So yeah, I agree with you, Nicola. I think it's a problem.
Yeah. So I think we've covered everything that we wanted to in this episode. Is there anything else that you would like to bring up? Anything else you feel that you'd like to share with people? Or
yeah, I mean, I guess I feel like there is so much fear in people that are having to go through the HA recovery process about weight gain. And being someone that had to go through this, and I know that y'all know this too, I just really want to encourage people that while that can be a really uncomfortable part, it's okay to sit in the discomfort and to understand that on the other side, you are not going to feel that way. You know, like your body weight or body size is not the determinant of how you feel about your body, right? Like you can feel beautiful and confident and sexy in a body that's healthy. Like you don't have to shrink yourself down to a specific size to feel that way. And I know that that holds so many people back. And I just think that that's something that, you know, so many people just need to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Doing a little Zoom cheer here. another thing that often comes up is sort of after people have recovered is this idea of quote unquote overshoot. I struggle with that terminology and that sort of mode of thinking. I mean, I do find that often people have to gain more weight than they had needed to in the past to have a regular period. Like if somebody has a regular period, a certain body size, and they lose it, then sometimes they need to go to a higher weight in order to get it back. But I'm still not sure that I would consider that overshoot. It's like, it's a place where your body needs to be. So how do you talk to people about that idea? And what would your recommendations be there?
Yeah. I mean, I just really encourage people to not focus so much on weight and the number on the scale during their recovery, because your body's going to find its natural place. If you continue to eat enough, not restrict, and not over-exercise or exercise to the point of not being able to meet your needs. And so if you overshoot, which not everyone does, I didn't. If you overshoot, if you read, you know, the research and the information and the science that we have on set point weight theory, your body's going to go back to the set point weight range naturally. Like you don't have to restrict calories or exercise to get your body down to that weight. And so as far as overshoot goes, I just want to say not everyone overshoots. Like, yeah, it happens, but like, don't expect that when you're gaining weight for recovery that you are overshooting and that you're going to have to in the future do something very strategic to get back to your set point weight range. The other thing that I want to say about that too is oftentimes people will get frustrated because they get, you know, back to the weight that they previously had their period back at, and they get frustrated because their period hasn't returned. You have to also think about the time frame. If I'm trying to compare notes as a 35-year-old woman and say, oh, but I'm so much higher than I was when I last had my period. I last had my period when I was 16 years old. So you can't compare that. You know, your set point weight range is going to change over time as you grow and change as a person. And so I think that I would encourage people to understand that as you're gaining weight for recovery, that might be where your body's happy, and that's okay. And I think that it can be really helpful to not weigh and not fixate on the number. I think you're going to have a way better chance of improving your relationship with your body and coming out on the other side body neutral, if not eventually body positive, when you're not focusing on the number on the scale.
Yep, absolutely. Great. So our question that we'd like to ask all of our guests at the end of our show is, how are you all in your life right now? So not necessarily with regards to food and exercise, but new cool things you're doing, things you're excited about.
Yeah, I love that. I would say I'm all in on really educating and calling out disordered eating, especially as it comes across in like wellness culture and within like the dietitian community. It's such a challenging balance, right? Because you don't want to be, you know, the other end of the spectrum where you're screaming at people and saying any person who's pursuing weight loss is bad and this is wrong and shame on you. Like, we don't want to come across that way. But at the same time, we want to lovingly say that like diets don't work. And we have so much information to back this up, and that you can have a healthy relationship with food and your body. And that doesn't require you having to shrink down to fit a ridiculous little box of a BMI, or any sort of, you know, standard that's been in place, based off of things that are not scientific at all. And so I would say I'm all in just on, you know, kind of continuing the conversation around challenging weight bias, and also just helping women advocate for themselves, because I can't tell you the number of people that go to their doctor and are laughed at for bringing up, you know, period loss with HA. You know, I think that we all deserve to have, you know, an informed opinion and to question things when we don't feel like we're getting the right standard of care, to get second opinions, and to, you know, recognize that while medical professionals and doctors are experts in medicine and they know a lot about physiology and the human body, you are the expert in your own life and you are the expert about your body. Like, nobody knows more about your body than you.
Absolutely.
I love that.
I love it. I love the education piece. It's so like, I think the more that we can do that and spread, you know, spread the message in, you know, in the general community, in amongst dietitians, amongst medical professionals, you know, I think that it's really helpful for, it's helpful for everybody. So I'm so glad you're doing that.
Yeah. You know, these are most of the principles of health at every size, which Nicola and I, we really believe in and practice both with coaching clients. This idea of, you know, respectful care and, you know, treating your body with respect as well. It's super important. And I think, you know, the counterpart of that is that we can obviously do our best in our own situations to just unlearn and detach our worth from our weight. At the end of the day, there really needs to be a change in society as well. And I think this is something that we all try in our very own way to make happen as well. And it's obviously much harder to make it happen. So always very happy to hear that there are other people in this boat with us that are saying the same thing. So it's really nice. So where can people find you, Lindsay? Where would you like to redirect people if they want to learn more about your work and what you do?
Yeah, you can find me. I'm most active on Instagram at food.freedom.fertility. I do have a website coming soon, but that's probably the easiest way just to see more about, you know, things that I talk about and, you know, things that I do in my practice.
Awesome. And your podcast? Lovely.
Oh, yes. And I have a podcast. so I have Food Freedom Fertility Podcast. There are two Food Freedom Fertility podcasts. One is more specific for PCOS. So mine's Food Freedom Fertility, HA Recovery. Beyond.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Lovely. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Lindsay. It's been so lovely to chat with you again.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing the message across, you know, on your side of the world, wherever you are, and to your you know, Instagram followers. And you make great content. I love to watch what you post on Instagram. I think it's really cool. So thank you for that. And thank you for being here with us today. And, you know, we hope to definitely see things improve and do see people being treated in a different way also in the medical community, for sure.
Yep.
Thank you, Lindsay.
I have one quick note to add. So my divorce is like semi-final now, but my name change has been finalized. So I will be going by Dr. Nicola Sykes going forward, just so that all our listeners know that. So that's it. All right.
That's an important one. Thanks, Miss Sykes. Lovely to meet you.
Dr. Sykes.
Dr. Sykes, of course. Okay, well, that's an important point. So thank you for mentioning that. And we will make sure to start saying those words instead of the good old Rinaldi name.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, you. Bye. Thank you both. Bye.
All right, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please take a few minutes to reflect on it and think how you have been all in this past week or few weeks. It always strikes me how different each person's all-in journey is. As I often say, there are many paths to HA and many paths out of it. Your journey is unique.
That is so true. And if you need more support on your journey, you should definitely start with No Period Now What, which you can get at noperiod.info/book.
You can also go to noperiod.info/appointments to schedule a time to speak with me on understanding your blood work, fixing issues underlying your missing periods, and for guidance around fertility treatments, pregnancy, and post-recovery changes.
And visit beyondbodyimage.com/work-with-me to connect with me to overcome the fear of weight gain and finally develop healthy coping mechanisms around stress and your relationship with food, exercise, and your body. Remember, we also have joined clients, so you can access both our domains of expertise within a common coaching package of sessions available from both our websites.
Also, join the No Period Now What Recovery Support Group at noperiod.info/support and let us know how all in is going for you. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast and found it helpful, please drop us a review on iTunes to help more people find it.
All in is not just about period recovery, it's about getting your life back. See you in 2 weeks.
You were lost in Babylon till you got lost again. You were lost in Babylon. Now find yourself and then take all that you've learned about what love and loss, pleasure and pain, and never get lost. Never get lost again.